We'll call the House Tax Committee to order, seeing that we don't have anyone to call to order. We will, other than Representative Biskins, we will go into recess till about 10:20. We'll call the meeting back to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Lesh moves the minutes of March 13th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lesh. Okay, Representative Loon moves House File 2280 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Representative Loon, welcome to your committee. If you could please present your bill, but before you do that, we have how many folks would like to testify on behalf of this bill supporting it? And then is there anyone that has any concerns, would like to testify with concerns to the bill? None? Representative Loon, you know what that means.
I like my odds, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Loon, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for holding the committee up this deadline week. I think that's the explanation I'm looking for. This bill would address the issue of increasing the number of barrels that we allow currently under our statutes for qualifying for a credit as a smaller brewer. And I have here to provide information and background on this Mr. Mark Stetsrud, who is the president and head of Summit Brewing, and also Ted Marty, who is here from Shell's to talk about this and kind of give you a little bit of the history, and I think could best respond to any questions the committee may have on this.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Okay, go ahead, jump over here. Okay, my name is Ted Marty. I am the president and fifth generation owner and operator of August Shell Brewing Company. And we are now entering our 152nd year in brewing and operation in New Ulm. And I'd like to start out by just giving you a little background on the history of the tax credit and how it's impacted the industry. In the late 60s and early 70s was a very tough time for small family-owned breweries in Minnesota. We had about 12 breweries, and it rapidly dropped to 8. And finally, the tax credit was passed through the legislature in about 1973, and it gave a tax credit for brewers up to 100,000 barrels. Unfortunately, it was probably too little too late, and we quickly dropped to 5 breweries, and then ultimately 2 breweries survived in this state, and that would have been us and Cold Spring. And so that tax credit, had we not had that during those years, I wouldn't be here today talking to you. So it is very important to a small brewer. Just for size comparison's sake, back in 1974 when the first credit was introduced, the largest brewer was about 340 times larger than the tax credit allowed a brewer to be. Today, under the same scenario, the largest brewer is about 1,000 times larger than the 100,000 barrel capacity. And with the increase that we're asking to raise the tax credit to, it drops to about 400 times. So you can see that as certainly the tax credit is, we're asking to increase it, but the industry is growing at a much faster pace. And the small, which is really a relative term, that small is getting bigger because the industry is getting bigger. And then I would mention that the definition of small in the eyes of the federal government is 2 million barrels. And the excise tax relief that they offer there reflects that in a tax credit to brewers up to 2 million barrels. And currently, August Shell, we are about 1/15 of the definition of small. So quite a ways to go yet. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mark.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Stetrud. I'm the founder and president of Summit Brewing Company.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. To continue the definition of this size, the scope of operations, For Ted and myself at our particular breweries, we will not see any type of economy of scale until we reach approximately 500,000 barrels a year in sales. Labor, packaging, utilities really are much at a greater cost than our larger competitors. Excise taxes is something that really is a significant part of our cost. 8% of our cost today of our sales is federal and state excise taxes. At the moment that a small brewer loses this credit at 100,000 barrels, this escalates close to 9.5% of cost of sales. And to put it in terms of realistic dollars, in 2010, our gross sales were $18.3 million. The amount of money that we contributed to the state and federal treasuries was $1.4 million. So we are an industry that is taxed, and we're very proud of contributing to the treasuries and what we do for the economy. Looking at job creation, Summit Brewing Company during the years of 2011 and through 2012, we're increasing our personnel by 20%. During the same period of time, August Shells is increasing their personnel by 18%. In 2012 alone, the combination of our two operations were contributing $580,000 in new payroll just in this year. We're extremely capital intensive. Over the past 13 years, Summit Brewing Company has invested well over $15 million. And again, Shells Brewing Company, over the past 5 years, has invested $5.8 million. And all of our capital expenditures are really based on increasing our production capacity, as well as improving our technology so that we can compete in the marketplace. In closing, I would just like to say that obviously, Summit Brewing Company has only been in business for 26 years as opposed to 152. But our tent stakes are driven very deep in our state. We're not looking at going to another area to operate our business. We do not see this bill as an inducement to stay, but we do see this bill as a way to significantly support the job creation and the growth of the Minnesota brewing industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sedra. Questions for the testifiers or the author, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick clarification, I believe, first testifier. Did I hear you right when you said that federal definition of a small brewer is 2 million barrels a year?
Mr. Marty?
Yeah. On the federal level, it is 2 million barrels is classified as a small brewer, and so...
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, can you tell me in the state of Minnesota how many brewers are between 250,000 barrels and 2 million barrels?
Mr. Marty?
Approximately, I think, 15 brewers probably that would be excluded.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marty, I think I have somewhere here that, on the revenue note, that 15 brewers would be affected by this bill. All right, that would mean to me that there are 15 brewers between 100,000 and 250,000.
Yes,
my question is, how many are between 250,000 and the federal definition of 2 million?
That is also about 15 brewers.
Okay, so 15 more.
Biskins? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the testifiers? Okay, thank you, Representative Lewin. And your final comments?
No, I thank the committee, and I think our two testifiers did a great job. But this is, we want to support our Minnesota brewers, and I think they have been at the forefront, which is now being a resurgence in craft brewing and the beginning of brewing in Minnesota. And this is something that is creating jobs and vitality in this industry. So I would urge the committee's support.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Representative Rukavina.
Sure. I would be remiss if I didn't mention my contribution to the Summit Brewing. And I even got Representative Tamar to drink a Summit beer, and he loves it, too. So
okay.
I wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina and Representative Tamar, for supporting Minnesota. Mr. Bagnoli. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, McGranche Law Firm, on behalf of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. I'm just here to support the bill. These are two of the finest businessmen in the state of Minnesota by virtue of, I think, Mr. Marty may have mentioned, he is the second oldest brewery in the United States. It is a fabulous institution for the state of Minnesota. These are folks that care about doing things right in the state of Minnesota, and they support small retailers. I represent retailers of the state, and we're here to support them today. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Any questions for Mr. Bagnoli? Okay, the bill will be laid over. Thank you, Representative Loon. Next bill, I will move House File 2049. Then, members, it would be my intention after discussion on this bill, we're not taking a vote on it. We will go then to a continuation of yesterday's agenda, and we'll be taking testimony on House File, I think it's 2337, is it? 2337. Okay, so I will move House File 2489. This is a bill, tobacco taxation provisions modified, definitions clarified. Basically, this is a bill having to do with the roll your own. I will have Mr. Michael explain what the bill does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill modifies the definition of cigarette and cigarette manufacturer, both for the excise tax and for the fire regulatory provisions, to include cigarettes that are produced by a machine that a retailer provides to its customers that enables the customer to buy loose tobacco and paper and to essentially use that machine to create their own cigarettes. And so it's defining the product of the machine as a cigarette for purposes of those two laws, the excise tax law and the fire safety law, and the retailer as manufacturer for purposes of those two laws as well.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Let's bring up the proponents of the bill first. I have on my list Thomas Bryant and Amonte Williams. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? I see a hand over here. And then just to get a couple folks on behalf of the bill, anyone wish to testify against the bill or with concerns on the bill? Okay, I just want to make sure we get everybody here. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir. We have House File 2489 before us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bryant, and I'm the executive director of two trade associations. One is the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association, and that's the tobacco wholesalers located here in the state. And the other is the National Association of Tobacco Outlets, and that is a national association of retail stores that sell tobacco products, tobacco stores, convenience stores, and grocery stores, and I represent both. My understanding, the Minnesota Grocers Association has also submitted a letter to the committee members, and a letter from the Minnesota Retailers Association is also being passed out in support of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The bill is very simple. It makes sure that all companies, including retail shops that now have these large roll-your-own machines, are classified as manufacturers and are treated the same in terms of state cigarette taxes and state cigarette fees. Now, operators of these large roll-your-own machines in these stores should be paying the same cigarette taxes and fees that legitimate retailers also pay when they sell cigarettes. That includes the following: $4.80 per carton state cigarette excise tax, $7.50 per carton state cigarette health impact fee, the $3.50 per carton non-settlement cigarette fee. You may remember the state settled the lawsuit with the tobacco companies in 1998. In 2003, the state implemented a $3.50 per carton fee on those companies that were not settling with the state. And finally, the $3.70 per carton state cigarette sales tax. My wholesalers now collect the state cigarette sales tax on cigarettes as a part of the state cigarette tax stamp. So we collect it ahead of time and remit that to the state. So when you add all those together, it comes to $19.50 per carton of cigarettes that legitimate retailers are now paying. Versus for the roll-your-own carton, when you have one manufactured in one of these stores, about $6.12. And that's because they're using what is called pipe tobacco that is a bulk tobacco put in these machines. And then the machines make the cigarettes with a cigarette tube. So they pay the 70% state tobacco tax as opposed to the $19.50. So they're paying about a little over $6. The difference is about $13.38 per carton of cigarettes that the state is losing. The issue of these machines versus traditionally manufactured cigarettes comes down to this. It's substance over form. It's pitting legitimate retailers who pay all of these taxes.
Excuse me, Mr. Bryant, Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate you pausing at this point because I do remember an admonition that you had for this committee from some testifiers just last year where the use of the words are very, very important. A number of times now we've heard the word legitimate retailers, which would imply, of course, that the other retailers are acting illegitimately and sometimes somehow underneath the law, and that's not correct. And so I would caution the use of the word legitimate, and let's use the proper words as we give our presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Mr. Bryant?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Representative. Going on, let me explain why there's a difference here. I passed out one of the sheets that's called Do's and Don'ts. It's put out by one of the manufacturers of these roll-your-own machines. And I want to just look at a couple of the phrases in that. On the right-hand column, at the very top, it says, do not advertise cartons. The consumer is not purchasing cartons of cigarettes when they rent your machine. But a carton of cigarettes contains 200 cigarettes, whether it's from a traditional manufacturer or made through one of these machines. The opponents of the bill may claim that they're not manufacturing cigarettes, but that is really what they're doing. They're buying these machines. They cost about $33,000 a piece. They rent space for the machines. They advertise these cigarettes on a per carton basis, and they sell them for about $25 per carton, which is about half of what a regular carton of cigarettes costs in the state when you add up all the regular cigarette taxes and fees. And they're doing this basically on a business model that avoids the payment of all those taxes and fees. Now, more importantly as well, the second recommendation in the right-hand column, it says do not advertise non-fire safe cigarettes. Minnesota law requires that all cigarettes manufactured use fire safe certified paper. That paper has little speed bumps in it, and that slows down the burn rate of the cigarette. So if someone puts the cigarette down on a chair, on a bed, it'll self-extinguish to avoid the likelihood of a fire. The cigarette tubes that are manufactured and used in these machines don't have that paper. So it creates a fire hazard and a safety hazard. I passed out to you as well from the National Fire Prevention Association a letter, which was just issued last week to all 50 state fire marshals. They're recommending in the letter that fire marshals enforce the state fire safe cigarette laws against these retailers that operate these machines because they don't comply with the fire safe cigarette paper requirements. The last recommendation in the right-hand column is, again, do not ring up the sale of tobacco tubes and machine use as cigarettes, packs, or cartons. Here again, a customer will walk out of that store with a carton of 200 cigarettes that have been made, but they haven't paid all those cigarette taxes and fees that retailers who sell traditionally manufactured cigarettes do. That's a circumvention of the state tax laws, and they're avoiding the payment of those laws. So for all of those reasons, I urge you to support House File 2489. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, a question for the testifier. You mentioned two things. One, the stamping of cartons, and My understanding is that most of these machines are just kind of a convenience for the consumer, so that maybe instead of having to have a machine at home or having to roll them at home, that they can just pop their tobacco in, much like you do with the coffee grinder at the grocery store, and quick crank out, you know, 20 cigarettes or what have you. Are they actually really mass producing cartons of cigarettes and then selling those cartons on the shelf in their shop? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, based on my experience from a national level, there's about 1,800 of these machines nationwide. 9 are in Minnesota. It varies from store to store. Some roll-your-own machine stores will pre-make the cartons of cigarettes and have them on the shelf. Or if you call ahead and order them, they'll have them ready for you to pick up. Others, when the customer walks in, they will then put the tobacco in the machine and make the cigarettes at that point. So it can be either way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then following to that, so I've actually watched tobacco stamping operations on a large scale in a tobacco distribution business, and the stamping is a really complex operation. It unpacks the cartons and stamps the packages, and there's a massive inventorying of the stamps, and I mean those things are basically almost like cash, so there's a huge auditing operation. I mean it's a lot of work, and so I'm wondering, how would that work? I guess I can see maybe how you'd put that kind of equipment into a retailer and allow them to do that if they're actually selling the cartons, you know, pre-packing the cartons. But how would that work for an individual who just wants to do 20 cigarettes? I mean, you couldn't put the stamp on the individual cigarette, could you? How would that actually work?
Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, we have been talking with the Department of Revenue on how that might work. There are various options. Each of these machines has what is called a counter, where it counts up the number of cartons that it produces. So I can envision, as an option, the state requiring these retail shops to fill out one piece of paper a month for a monthly cigarette and health impact fee return, where they use the counter from month to month, and they add up how many cartons they have produced in that machine, and then they remit the various taxes and fees based on what the counter registered as that machine producing. So that's one option. There might be other options that the Department of Revenue would also explore as a replacement for the stamp, because some of the shops will just put the 200 cigarettes in a Ziploc plastic bag. Others will put them back in the box that the empty tubes came out of. So they do it different ways. So it might be simpler to do the counter type version where they look at how many cartons have been produced, and then they remit the tax based on that. That's one option.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Were you finished at this point, Mr. Bryant? I mean, you can stay here. There may be more questions. We'll go to that couple test. Or Representative Gottwald.
Real quickly, Mr. Chair, I had a question on this very specific issue from a local retailer in my district who does a very small quantity of this and says this bill will put him out of business. Is there a quantity threshold? Can we say that a small shop that's producing just a few of these things, the roll-your-own machine, is exempt from this, or is this going to cover everybody from somebody who does 5 cigarettes to 5,000 cigarettes?
Mr. Bryant.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I think that might be for the Department of Revenue to determine how they administer the specific volumes. The bill doesn't, you know, draw a bright line as to what is or is not a volume. It's more based on, are they providing a commercial machine at the store to produce cigarettes? If you're thinking about the little small roll-your-own machines where you turn a crank and it inserts tobacco in one tube at a time, that's more for home use. Stores might use that to demonstrate a machine, but they don't use it to mass produce. So they're, under federal law, there's a personal exemption use for roll-your-own machines for that very reason. But I don't know. Department of Revenue would probably have to work on that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bryant, though, I don't think we should get confused, the small take-home roll-your-own machines versus these things.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. This bill would not regulate the small take-home, make one at a time cigarette at your kitchen table because of the personal use exemption under the federal law. It only involves the larger commercial machines that operate at fairly high speeds and make a lot of cigarettes.
Representative Gottwald.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I'm more concerned about small operators that are doing this in small quantity. I mean, it'd be like a microbrew versus a large brewer, if we want to go back to a previous bill. These are small ma-and-pa shops that are producing relatively small quantities of these. I suppose you'd call it a commercial facility because they're using the manufacturer or this device in a commercial setting. But I think, at least in my mind, we want to differentiate between those who are trying to compete with the big guys producing thousands of these things versus somebody who just, you know, rolls some for a small number of customers.
Mr. Bryant.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, again, it might be up to revenue to decide where that line exists. If it is a simple form for a retailer to fill out and remit the appropriate taxes so everyone's on a level playing field, that might be what it is. If they're making a very small quantity of these from time to time, my sense is the rest of their business, you know, might still not be affected. It depends. I don't know the particular store you're referring to. But these really are targeted at the stores that only have these machines in them and are producing a lot of cartons on a regular basis.
Representative Gottwald? Okay, I'll be asking, after we have some more testimony, the department to come down with some of their thoughts on House File 2489. If the next gentleman could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lance Klatt, Executive Director of the Minnesota Service Station and Community Store Association.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The members of the association support House File 2489, and with me today I have two of my members, Chan Smith from the Corner Store and Tony Raymer from the Watch and Fill Stores, who'd love to testify in support of House File 2489. Thank you.
Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Channing Smith. I'm a second-generation ma-and-pa store owner in Emmer Grove Heights, Minnesota. And my one comment, or the main comment I'd like to bring to you from my position and the size of my business, is to create a playing field, so to speak, that is even. I'm not afraid of competition. I guess you could say I embrace it, reluctantly sometimes, but I embrace it from the standpoint, if I can't do better or beat them, God bless them. That's how we got here in the first place. But to the point that this is really a cigarette and cigarette production, my one comment would be I've had a couple of customers that say that they view this as a good lower cost alternative to their smoking. Been a long time customers of mine, and they say they see it as that, which to me would say that we're providing the same product, thus the same taxation level would seem reasonable to me.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Tony. My name is Tony Raymer of the Wash and Fill Stores.
R-O-E-M-E-R.
R-A-M-M-E-R.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I represent eight communities that we have retail stores in. We operate gas stations, auto repair, car wash, and the biggest thing is just the evasion of taxes. I feel that when you have one of these commercial machines in a retail establishment, you become a manufacturer. You're not a retailer. We have prime locations that we paid for to become a retail location, and if I wanted to be a manufacturer or go against a manufacturer, I would have went and got a warehouse, and I would have bought these manufacturing machines and produce cigarettes. I'm a retailer and just provide a service to our customers and products. So thank you, members of the committee and
thank
chair.
Thank you, Mr. Raymer. Any questions for Mr. Smith or Mr. Raymer or Mr. Klatt? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill, House File 2489? It's nice to actually have people for your bill. Isn't that nice? It's nice. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Monty Williams. I'm a partner in Shepherd Williams and Associates, and I'm here today representing Philip Morris. My comments and opinions today are going to be based on 30 years of experience in my career with the State Board of Equalization in California, where I was Chief of Excise Taxes and Chief of Criminal Investigations there. I have over 20 years' experience in tobacco tax administration and enforcement at the state level. I was also the chairman and the past chair of the FTA tobacco tax section and served on their executive committee. Since leaving government, I have over 6 years' experience in private practice dealing almost exclusively in tobacco issues. As I said, I'm here today representing Philip Morris in support of 2489. We view this bill as addressing a growing problem in Minnesota and other states throughout the country, and that is that most state statutes do not cover these types of new machines that are in place, and it's what we view as a loophole in the law at this point. The bill is very simple. It tries to put everybody back on a level playing field. If you manufacture cigarettes, everybody should be licensed, pay the proper amount of taxes in the states, and adhere to all the other laws of Minnesota, just like all the manufacturers do, like I represent Philip Morris. Roll-your-own machines have been around for a number of years, as was referenced earlier, the small home machines with the crank. That's not what we're discussing here. In April of 2009, Congress passed some laws dealing with tobacco products, where they raised the federal tax on cigarettes to $1.01 a pack. At the same time, they adjusted the tax on roll-your-own tobacco to be semi-equivalent at $24.78 a pound. However, pipe tobacco increased at a much lower rate, and it currently is only taxed at $2.83 a pound. And a statistic that you might find interesting is since the federal law changed, the volume of pipe tobacco sold in the United States, pipe tobacco, has increased 350%. While the volume of roll-your-own tobacco has decreased 65%. So basically what's happening today is there's a lot of roll-your-own tobacco that's being sold and labeled as pipe tobacco to avoid the federal taxes. This situation has not only cost the federal government a tremendous amount of money, but it's also caused the implementation of what we see now in stores, what we call retail cigarette manufacturing machines. These are machines that can produce up to 15,000 cartons of cigarettes in a year. They're not small hand-cranked machines. They're made specifically to commercially produce cigarettes. There are now several companies producing these machines. They're getting faster, they're getting more sophisticated, and they're becoming more prolific throughout the country. And they're now in Minnesota. The business model here is touted by one of the companies is you can get these machines, make a lot of money by avoiding the payment of the cigarette taxes in the states. And as was said earlier, the tax in this state, just the excise tax, is $16 a carton on cigarettes, $6.12 on a carton of these roll-your-own products. That's a big advantage in the marketplace simply by not paying the appropriate amount of tax. A retailer buys the machine, installs the machines, maintains the machines, and helps the consumer if they need to operate the machines. And please remember that every cigarette made in one of these machines and sold is a cigarette that's not being taxed properly in Minnesota, meaning your cigarette revenue is not being where it should be. A single machine operating at 50% capacity can produce about $73,000 in lost revenue per year. When this issue first came up, there was almost no machines in Minnesota. 2 weeks ago, there was four. Now there's nine that we know of in the state. So this is growing. Other states, such as Kentucky, Wisconsin, have 40, 50, 60 of these machines already. There's over 1,000 of them out in the marketplace now. The cigarettes created by these machines look just like regular commercially manufactured cigarettes. They smoke like regular commercial cigarettes. And the retailers that own these machines own them, and that's what they're providing. The opponents of the bill would have you believe this is the same as consumers making roll-your-own cigarettes in their house. Nothing could be further from the truth. These cigarettes are not made in a consumer's home. They're not made by hand. They're made by a commercially viable, operating, automated machine that generates the cigarettes by the combination of raw materials into a finished product. And make no mistake, the customers that walk out of these stores walk out with commercially manufactured cigarettes. In our opinion, therefore, the same laws that apply to Philip Morris and any manufacturer of cigarettes should apply to these people too, in order to create a level playing field. It would be unconscionable for Philip Morris, for example, to open up the manufacturing facilities and allow people to come in and put tobacco in their machines and manufacture cigarettes and walk out the door and claim that they weren't cigarettes. I doubt that the federal government would approve of that, and I certainly know that the state of Virginia wouldn't. the opponents also say that they do pay taxes, the OTP tax, but that's not the right tax. The product that's being manufactured here is a cigarette tax, and the cigarette tax is what should be paid on these products at $16 a carton, not $6.12. Opponents will also say they're going to be double taxed. Well, manufacturers can buy tobacco without the payment of taxes, and also in the state SET area, licensing can be done so they're licensed distributors, so they can provide state tax-free product, so they're not paying twice. And also there could be a method of credits to be implemented by the Revenue Department, which we're working with them, too, on that, to
Mr.
come up
Williams,
with a way so no one's double
Mr. Williams, how much longer do you need to go here?
Oh, about
done?
About half a minute.
Okay.
So all we're asking for is that the playing field here be leveled, everybody compete on the same process and compete against each other fairly, and no one gets an advantage simply based on the non-payment of taxes that are rightly due in the state. We ask that you support this bill and put it back on an even level playing field. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. This is something that I would think the federal government would also be concerned about, because if you know, there's all these machines out there, they are costing the federal government and the state government a lot of money. Is there any movement at the congressional level to ban these things?
The Tobacco Trade Bureau, which is the one who regulates tobacco, has issued a ruling that defines them as manufacturers. However, that has they were sued over that ruling, and it's currently been enjoined at the federal level. But the people that administer the federal taxes have stated that these are manufacturers. And we have to, at the federal level, we have to wait for the outcome of that. However, the federal outcome doesn't necessarily have any impact on what states do as far as defining who's who.
I mean, Minnesotans are trendsetters and leaders and so forth, but maybe when do you think that lawsuit would be finalized or the outcome?
I really have no idea. Federal things don't move that quickly. And I would point out that the one problem with, you know, waiting for the federal issue to be resolved is the fact that no one knows how long that'll take. And this issue is growing and growing, you know, every year. And the longer you wait, the more revenue is being lost to your fund. This isn't an increase in revenue issue. This is simply maintaining the revenue that you currently get or should get.
Okay. We'll have some questions. How many more folks wish to testify on for in support of this bill? One more, and then, because we do want to get into a continuation of our discussion from yesterday on the omnibus tax bill, but we will take some questions. So Representative Downey, Leshen, Paymar, and Marcourt. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Williams, how big a competitive threat is this? Could we, by virtue of our tax policy, actually put the big tobacco companies out of business?
Mr. Williams?
Representative to the Chair, I'm not put the big tobacco companies out of business by this bill? I don't think so.
Representative Downey?
I think it puts it on a level playing field. Without this bill, it becomes a competitive issue because one entity that does the same thing as another entity is paying more taxes and the other one is not paying those taxes. So it is a competitive issue for all tobacco manufacturers, cigarette manufacturers.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question was just from your perspective as a large tobacco company, is this a big enough competitive threat that this tax imbalance that you're referring to would actually threaten the very existence of your company?
Over the long term, depending on how popular it got, it could have a significant impact on the amount of cigarettes that are sold to these types of, you know, retail manufacturing machines.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How did you find out there are 9 in Minnesota? Where is that? Is that public information?
It's on the website of one of the companies that sells.
Oh, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, please. Representative Lesh, you have the floor.
Thank you. So how did you find out there were 9 in Minnesota, and where are they located? So names of some retailers, locations, like what kind of retailers have these kinds of machines?
Mr. Williams.
Representative through the chair. It's on the website of one of the companies that sells the machines. I did not bring the addresses and names of the companies with me today, but we can get those for you if you want them. It's public information.
Is there more than one manufacturer of these machines?
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I know of at least 2 now myself.
Representative Lesh?
So if I wanted to go find one of these to roll my tobacco, where would I go? What would be the closest retailer to here where I could go roll some stuff right now?
Mr. Williams?
Representative to the Chair, like I said, I don't have the addresses with me today, but I can find that out for you.
Representative Lash?
No, that's it, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bryant, to that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lash, I have a printout of the company's website page that shows the 9 stores in Minnesota, and I also wrote a letter to the Minnesota Attorney General. I can provide you with the street addresses of those stores. There's one Bloomington, St. Cloud, Waite Park, and Sauk Rapids, I believe, that I know for sure, but I can provide you with those specific addresses, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, can I have a question for the witness from Philip Morris.
Yes, he's right here.
Okay. Sir, you mentioned that I'm out of breath from going up the stairs. Not the cigarettes.
I wanted to ask you, you were talking about this product.
Representative Paymar, can you use the microphone, please?
You were talking about this product looking the same, smelling the same, and tasting the same as your product. So does that mean that this product causes emphysema and lung cancer and kills people at the same rate that your product does?
Mr. Williams.
Representative through the chair, my expertise is in tax administration and tax enforcement, so I would have to hesitate to offer any kind of an opinion on health impacts of these products.
Representative Paymar?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, I just have a comment after the testifiers, if that's all right.
Okay, we will keep you on the list. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has to do with a flyer here, the do's and don'ts. And I don't know who to ask a question about this because there's no source as to where this is from or who
Mr.
put this
Bryant,
together.
Mr. Bryant, do you know where that came from? And good point, Representative Kiffmeyer. They should be clearly identified. Mr. Yeah. Bryant?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, this came from the website of one of the roll-your-own tobacco machine manufacturers. I will find out the exact company. It's either roll-your-own filling station or another manufacturer of these machines. There's only like 3 in the country, so I will provide that information to you.
So, Mr. Chairman, I just have another question. Is this the exact flyer that you printed off their website, or did you do this as a compilation? Because it says here, as suggested by, so I was just concerned, suggesting and as suggested or so on, but this looks like something that might have been put together.
Excuse me. Let's get Mr. Bryant a chair here. One of the
Very good.
Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, it's my understanding this came off a website, perhaps of one of the competing manufacturers of the roll-your-own machines. Again, I will provide that information to you directly and the committee members so you know exactly where it came from. But we didn't put this together, if that was the question. It came from a website, is my understanding.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Bryant, you are the source. You're the one that distributed this today or brought this today, Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Bryant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, I distributed it to the committee, yes.
Okay, thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to be concerned that when we suggestions aren't quite the same, so I just want to be fair to anybody who was compiling some of these things sometimes. I just thank you. I'll ask more questions of Mr. Bryant.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Okay, if you could please join us, and then we'll go to the department, and then we'll go to folks with concerns. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Molly Moilanen. M-O-I-L-A-N-E-N. And I'm with Clearway Minnesota, the independent nonprofit founded with 3% of the 1998 tobacco settlement. Our vision is to eliminate the harm that tobacco causes the people of Minnesota. From a public health and a tax compliance perspective, Representative David's bill moves us in the right direction. If the committee decides to include this provision in the omnibus tax bill, the committee should also consider including Representative Loon's little cigar bill, House File 743, which was heard in this committee last session last year and also held over for possible inclusion. Both proposals update the definition of cigarette to close tax loopholes, support tax compliance, and tax conformity. Minnesota is not alone in wrestling with these issues. Similar roll-your-own bills have been proposed in 25 states, And several states, including Montana, Connecticut, Tennessee, and New Mexico, already treat so-called little cigars as cigarettes. These tax loopholes are important ones to close. Little cigars and cigarettes made in a roll-your-own store are almost indistinguishable from traditional cigarettes. But, as previously mentioned, they are much, much cheaper. The state loses a significant amount of tax revenue every time a smoker switches to the lower-tax little cigars or roll-your-own cigarettes. These cheap products are just as addictive and just as harmful as traditional cigarettes. Increasing the excise tax on these products by taxing roll-your-own and little cigars at the rate they should be taxed at will prevent youth from starting to smoke and help current smokers cut back or quit. Little cigars and roll-your-own cigarettes keep current smokers addicted by making their addiction more affordable and allow youth to access very low-cost flavored tobacco products, like these peach-flavored Remingtons that I bought for $1.92 versus a traditional pack of cigarettes for $5.50. If the committee is interested in updating the definition of cigarette in the tax statutes to close loopholes and strive for compliance and conformity, we hope you will consider an update to reflect the evolving tobacco market, which includes both little cigars and roll your own. Prioritizing one over the other would be a missed opportunity and reinforce dated tax statutes that are not keeping pace with the evolving tobacco market here in Minnesota. Instead, the committee could address two significant loopholes and help make the next generation tobacco-free. Thank you.
Ms. Vaughn, who do you represent again?
Clearway, Minnesota.
They never support my bill.
I'm in uncharted territory, members. thank you for supporting this bill. It's a fine piece of legislation. Fine piece.
We all support your
bill. Oh, good. Okay.
Just to clarify, we believe, Mr. Chair, that this bill does move in the right direction in terms of the specifics, in terms of the definitions. We would really leave that to you and the Department of Revenue to work through. But it definitely moves us in the right direction.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Mylan. I appreciate it. Mr. Klatt, briefly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the questioner was brought up earlier that regarding Philip Morris or maybe even other tobacco companies out there, that there's a threat in them going out of business. But really, the real threat here is the small independent business owners in the state of Minnesota that have paid taxes and played by the rules for many generations. And I feel like that is the main threat. It's not really Philip Morris or the other tobacco companies out there today. Thank you.
Mr. Klatt. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Klatt, to that point, is there anything prohibiting other retailers from also getting these machines and participating equally?
Mr. Klatt.
Representative, Mr. Chair, there's nothing prohibiting these retailers or my members from receiving these machines. My retailers feel that they are retailers and not manufacturers, and they feel that in the past and in the present and the future that it's important that cigarettes are taxed at the same rate as roll your own or other tobacco products or vice versa. And with that being said, that our retailers do support this, and it is available to them, but at the same time, it's their retailers, not manufacturers. Thank you.
Representative Druskowski.
That's all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Druskowski. Okay, with that, we will bring down the department. Representative Marquardt, I have you on the list. Do you want to wrap it up when we're done with both sides, or
sure.
What's best for you? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. If the department can come down and make comments on House File 2489. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Susan Von Mesch with the Department of Revenue. And with me today is Mr. Patrick Finnegan, and he's with the department's Special Tax Division, and he's going to be providing the testimony today.
Thank you, Ms. Von Mesch. Mr. Finnegan, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, Patrick Finnegan, attorney with the Revenue Department. I'll make a couple brief comments. The department has become aware of these roll-your-own cigarette machines probably Within the last year, we know of four or five locations within the state where they're located. Some locations have more than one machine. We have been in discussion with other states as to how they are reacting to these machines and what they're doing to enforce their cigarette laws. The problem, I think, that we have is that we collect the tax at the distributor or wholesale level. The bill would classify these retailers as manufacturers. That we don't do a lot of interaction at the manufacturer level, so the whole roll your own cigarette machine has raised a lot of administrative questions for us. So we've been just sort of monitoring the issue, and not that we have the answers of where to go from here. We've been in discussions with the people behind this bill, and we'll continue to do that. But there are a lot of questions that we have as far as how we would administer this. The whole stamping issue that Representative Downey raised, it's just hard for us to envision how stamping would be made at the retail level. I mean, there are machines that do it, but they're at the wholesale level, and it takes a lot of equipment to do that type of thing. These machines just produce individual cigarettes. They're not put in cartons or packs or anything automatically.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Finnegan. Ms. Von Mosch, and we'll go to questions for Mr. Finnegan or Ms. Von Mosch. Ms. Von Mosch, does the department have a position on this bill, House Bill 2489?
Mr. Chair, right now we're neutral on the bill. We don't have a position, but we're very willing to work with you, with members of this committee and the legislature, to figure out how we can deal with this issue, especially as it grows. It is a we believe it is a fairly low volume issue at this time, but in monitoring what's going on in other states, we know that they're kind of targeting Minnesota for potentially more growth, and so it is something that we would like to work with you on finding a solution.
What would it take to get department support?
I think we'd maybe just need to have a discussion about the potential mechanisms to go, as they would involve writing a bill in such a way that it may have a tax increase in it, and how that would be interpreted, if that's interpreted as compliance revenue versus expanding the tax. So I think we'd have to have some discussions around some of those issues.
Of course, I wouldn't want to carry a bill that has a tax increase. And in my mind, this bill simply reflects taxes that are already due that are not being collected.
Mm-hmm.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Sounds good.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Von Mosch or Mr. Finnegan from the department? Thank you very much. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Coming, and we'll be working with you to try and gain your support. Okay, we have a couple folks with concerns. I have on the list Mr. Todd Long, Jarrett On, A-U-N-E, and then Jennifer Erickson. We could come on down and visit. I've got three. Is there anyone else that wants to be on that list? Why don't you all come down?
Mr. Chair, I have some handouts.
Certainly, we'll have a page hand the handout out. If you could please join us here. Now, I have three on the list. Am I missing someone here? There won't be. Okay. So now they're supporting the bill? The third person?
Jared was unable to show up.
Oh, okay. Okay. How do you pronounce his last name?
Ani.
Ani. Okay. Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Todd Long.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Long.
I'm Jennifer Erickson.
And Ms. Erickson, welcome to the committee. If you could please present your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Todd Long, and I'm the owner of Super Smokes in Minnesota. Of great concern to me is HF 2489, which seeks to redefine my businesses as a manufacturer. I began opening these retail stores a little over a year ago. I now own and run four stores and help manage a fifth. Over the course of a year, I have personally invested almost $500,000 into the Minnesota economy, there are now five less retail storefronts sitting empty in Minnesota. I currently employ about 20 people and have an annual payroll of about $270,000, not including myself. My employees range from students paying their way through college to fathers raising two children. We purchase and consume products and services from other small businesses in our local Minnesota communities and contribute to the economy in many other ways. If this bill passes, all of this positive small business growth here in Minnesota ceases. We are retail stores engaged solely in retail sales. We do not and never will manufacture anything. Our customers use a machine about the size of an ATM machine in our store and do the same thing they would at home to roll their own. They must purchase the exact same raw materials, weigh up and blend their tobaccos, load and operate the machine completely through its cycle, and package the final result. My employees do none of this for the customers. Customers usually spend a minimum of a half hour at the stores and sometimes over an hour and a half to complete this process before they leave. Philip Morris, Altria, and RJ Reynolds are not my competition. They're in the business of manufacturing. That's their business plan. To compare the machine we let customers use in our store to theirs is kind of like comparing the Wright Brothers Flyer to a Boeing 747. What their machine produces in only 1 hour would take my most efficient customer using our machine with zero downtime, 24 hours a day, 6 full weeks. Hardly a fair and level playing field as they're talking about. My stores could not also comply with these regulatory requirements of manufacturing this bill would impose. Reason one, our employees do not operate the machine, the consumers do. Second, we're not able to obtain a manufacturing permit required federally due to ongoing federal litigation. And federal regulations would also require us to have exclusive manufacturing space separate from our retail space. The zoning ordinances would prohibit this operation because we operate in retail zone spaces. Also, we would have to create, trademark, produce packaging, and register these new products with the state and federal government. We tightly adhere to all current state and federal tax and regulatory requirements. Super Smokes is one of only a handful of licensed tobacco distributors in Minnesota. We do purchase our own tobacco wholesale. As such, we are required to pay the currently mandated tobacco tax on all products, which is 70%. That amounts to tens of thousands of dollars per month that I pay to the state. My businesses are not a conveniently disguised tax dodge. If this bill passes, all positive economic growth I have helped create in Minnesota ceases and goes away. I have personally invested so much I will be bankrupt. My employees paying their way through college and young fathers supporting their families and children, including myself, will be out of work. I'm asking you to vote against this bill. This is not a time to shut down small businesses in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Long. You made the statement these machines are about the size of an ATM, just like the ones they use at home.
No, these machines are about the size of an ATM. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
What are the ones that you use at home? What are the size of the ones you use at home?
The ones they use at home, they're about a foot by a foot square.
Okay.
A little bit bigger than a shoebox.
Thank you, sir. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. I was just curious, you said that they buy all their materials and then they rent the machine, and I'm curious how much it costs to rent the machine and how long it would take to rent. Roll the equivalent of a carton of cigarettes. So I guess 200 spins.
Mr. Long?
Mr. Chairman, committee member. The products that they purchase are the exact same products that are available at every other single tobacco retailer. We don't have anything special. It's the same roll-your-own products that they can buy at our store and take home and use, or use in the store, or go down the street to all these other retailers that they're talking about that are carrying the exact same products. We charge about $9 to rent the machine. The entire process, on a good day, by the time they come in, takes them about a half hour. The machine itself takes about 10 minutes, and then there's time to package it up. There's all the prep time of weighing the tobacco, loading the tubes. This is not a convenience store operation. If you come into the stores, you'll see people, even when there's not a line, takes them about a half hour.
Representative Cano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $9, are you charging that, like, for how much time it takes or for how many cigarettes you're actually rolling? The $9 rental, what is that? It's $9 per what?
Mr. Long?
Yeah, Mr. Chairperson, the committee member. The $9 has to do with what we consider one credit, which is the equivalent, we call it a run, which is around 200 spins.
Mr. Long, the issue often comes up of fire safe paper, and you had mentioned that if you are going to use this machine, you just get the stuff like you would for the roll your own. In Minnesota, you for your roll your own at home, where you got the little machine at home, you don't have to have FireSafe paper. Is that correct? Or?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The products that and the issue with the FireSafe is not an issue that we're trying to that we're not intentionally complying with. Those products are not available. Not available at my store. They're not available at the tobacco store right in front of my store. Two stores down. It's not even a product that's manufactured. So it's the same product that if they were to buy roll your own at you know ABC Tobacco or any of these products that are represented by NATO, they'd be using.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Erickson, your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Erickson, and I am an employee of J&L Smokes in Cannon Falls. I have worked at J&L since it opened in January. I am here today to oppose the HF 2489 because it would shut down my employer and put me out of work. I lost my previous job. I've been unemployed for some time. I was hired at J&L, which I was lucky enough to get through a friend of the family's. As a working single mom, this job is perfect for me. It's full-time, it lets me get my kids off to school, and I am home when they get off the bus, which saves me greatly in daycare expenses. I know firsthand what happens when people come into our store and roll their own cigarettes. The customer buys all the materials they need. They rent the machine, and they operate the machine themselves. The other employees and I do not operate the machine at all. The customers put the tubes and tobacco into the machine and the machine, and collect the rolled cigarettes when they are done. I can promise you that no one manufactures cigarettes in our store. I also know that all of our customers pay all of the taxes that Minnesota and the federal government requires. They pay the OTP tax and the tobacco and sales tax on the tubes and the machine rental. If you pass this bill, you will force J&L Smokes out of business and I will lose my job. I don't want to see J&L shut down, and I definitely do not want to lose my job. And I can speak for the other employees who also have families. Times are tough, and none of us can afford to be out of work. If this bill is passed, I think it will be completely unfair to my employers, other employees, and customers, because we are in no way manufacturers. We are just regular people with regular jobs, and this bill only exists to put regular people out of business. I urge you to oppose the job-killing bill and support small businesses in Minnesota. Thank you for your time and the chance to speak today. And can I also read from my my boss? He owns J&L Smokes. He could not be here today, but he did write up a little something.
Certainly.
And he wrote to committee members, my name is Justin Olson, and although I was unable to be here today, I wanted to voice my opposition to the HF 2489. I'm a 31-year-old entrepreneur who opened J&L Smokes in Cannon Falls in January as an extension of a family-owned business. Opening this business couldn't have been more exciting time in my life. But now, just a few short months after opening our doors, our business is in jeopardy of closing due to this proposed legislation. I believe it is wrong to characterize me as a cigarette manufacturer because it is the customer who purchases the components and operates the machine. By passing HF 2489, you would be taking away my dream of being a business owner and the jobs of my wonderful employees. Please support small businesses in Minnesota by opposing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Representative Portman?
Well, I can wait. I understand there's a list. It's not a question for the testifiers, but the legislation.
Oh, okay. Okay. Representative Lincheski?
I don't have a question.
Okay. I'm sorry. Members, any questions for the testifiers? Representative Lesh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see on the for the testifiers what you distributed. You've got total cost for materials to break down to roll their own, about $30 ballpark. It's been a long time since I sold a carton of cigarettes at the gas station up in Brooklyn Center. So what's a carton costing these days? I mean, I understand there's a difference between the discount ones versus Marlboro or something, but what's a carton costing?
Current state minimum, Mr. Chairman, committee member. The current state minimums on, I think, like a carton of Marlboros is about $56.90.
Representative Lesh?
Okay, so that, I mean, that's a, and if you're smoking a pack a day, Mr. Chair, and how long is a carton going to last you?
Mr. Long?
I don't know how many cartons.
10 days.
10 days.
I don't know. 10 days.
I smoke those legal cigarettes, so I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Did I say that out loud, Mr. Chair?
We'll let Mr. Long give the answer. You asked the question, Mr. Long, I believe.
I did, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Long?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lutz. Yeah, a carton of cigarettes contains 10 packs, so it's going to take them about 10 days to go through it. As far as for the price difference, it seems that this legislation does not address what I think you're referring to as the problem in the pricing difference. Since we're selling the exact same products you can buy at any roll-your-own shop or gas station in this state, we're actually charging more than they are. We charge the rental fee for that machine, where if you take that almost $10 charge off of there, if they decide to take these products home and roll them at home, which will take them approximately an hour to an hour and a half, they're going to be $10 cheaper than that. So we are not providing a cheaper alternative to the cigarettes that are available in convenience stores.
Well, Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to figure out here is how many customers is Philip Morris losing to you guys in that, and how much of a threat really are you to them? Because my question is this just an effort by Philip Morris to squish out the little guy? Because we see that when corporations come in and do that. And that, of course, is a function of how many customers they're losing. And, in fact, they're losing a lot to you. That would suggest that there's more of an incentive for them to support this bill. That's my question. And you're suggesting to me that, no, there's no price difference. Really, it is this effort just to get rid of these machines. Am I hearing you correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, I do believe that is a lot of the case. It is, you know, a multi-billion-dollar company that does see some competition in the roll-your-own entity. They're trying to squash out the roll-your-own in this country. Interestingly enough, I also have another job as a pilot. I travel internationally a lot. You can buy Philip Morris Marlboro-type roll-your-own products in other European countries because they've realized that that's the direction that people are starting to go. They want to produce their own. They just don't do that here yet in this country, so they're trying to squish us out, but there's a lot of other roll-your-own opportunities out there. It seems that this is more of, you know, a way to get rid of us. It's not addressing lost tax issues. As a wholesaler in this state, there's only a handful of us. I actually collect and pay all the wholesale tax into the state before it even gets to the store. The sales tax that's collected on the cigarettes is collected at the wholesaler level just to avoid people not paying the tax. We pay sales tax every single month to the tune of about $10,000 at my stores on all the products we sell.
So, Mr. Chair, one last question. So why then, if there's no price difference, as you're suggesting, why, or take time, labor taken into account at my kitchen table or whatever, why is it that I would do this? Is it like brew your own beer movement, similar kind of thing, or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, there is the ability to mix. We've got about 10 different types of tobaccos. They're all bulk. We let them mix them up in any different ratio of flavor they like, just like microbrewery. There is a price difference. I mean, if they're at $56 in the state, we're at about $30. The same roll your own products, if you weren't charging, you know, would be, you know, somewhere in the $20 range. So we're kind of in between. But some people prefer to make their own, like a microbrewery. Some people do it to save money. If they're totally worried about the bottom line, they'd sit at home during a football game on Saturday and roll their cigarettes. That's where a lot of our customers have come from, where they've just decided, I don't want to take the hour at home to do this. I'll just come in here and do it. It still takes them an hour to do it. This is not a convenience store operation by any means. You can't walk in, grab your cup of coffee, pack of cigarettes, and be out in 30 seconds.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Long, if a customer's in there and you're in the store and some of the paper gets crosswise and kind of gums the machine up, who helps them clean it, get it going again?
Mr. Chairman, we do have employees that will unjam the machine. I consider that more of a maintenance issue. Our employees are not allowed to touch or use any of the raw materials. They don't touch the tobacco. They don't touch the tubes that are going in there. They don't touch the final product in there. But obviously, for safety regulation, you know, issues, if you have a machine with moving parts, I'm sure my insurance isn't going to let every customer stick their fingers back there.
Any other questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Long, it sounds like virtually each person has their own individual product then that goes out the door. So to construe that those are the same types of products that Philip Morris or other companies are producing would be way off base. You're talking about really custom designed products, tailor made by the individual who is deciding what those products are going to be and look like. Is that accurate,
Mr. Long?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's absolutely correct. There's an infinite number of blends that they can pick from. We save each of their blends for whatever they used last time in the computer, so when they come in, they can remember what it is. Many times they say they want the flavor to change a little bit this way or a little bit that way. All of our employees are trained very well on how to mix up these different blends and recipes to help them pick and choose what they want. And that's also one of the other problems. In order to become a manufacturer, we have to have a trademarked, branded, labeled product. We don't have a trademark. I can't trademark brand 70, 80, 100 different flavors for each of these customers. Apply for the trademarks, apply for branding, packaging, register that each with the state and the federal government. It'd be like the microbrewery, I wouldn't even call it the microbrewery. In this state, there's places where you can go brew your own beer, make your own wine, and we're just along that same line. They provide the same equipment. They provide the same raw materials. You can do that at home. You can do it in your bathtub. You can buy your own brewing equipment, do it at home. The same as you can do it here. We're not treating those companies as manufacturers any differently. They're paying the same applicable taxes for what they're doing as we are.
Representative Iskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Long, could you outline for us just what if this bill was enacted, what would it mean in terms of taxes again? You got the other OTP, other tobacco product tax, and you've got the taxes on the little cylinder pieces of paper, et cetera. What would this mean? This would mean an additional tax on top of it, the same tax that we're collecting for commercially produced cigarettes. Can you outline that for us and what that would mean for you?
Mr. Long?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the exact breakdown of the taxes in Minnesota, I'm not sure if I know with the health impact fee and the other excise taxes. That's what we'd be responsible for paying in the state. I'm assuming then as a manufacturer we wouldn't be paying the OTP tax because we'd be buying as a manufacturer. These machines, though, are not designed to be manufacturing. We don't have employees. You're not going to have an employee sitting there watching this machine kicking out 20,000 cigarettes per minute. On a good day, ours makes 20 per minute. So it's not even a possibility for us to be a manufacturer. I guess I'd have to list every single customer who comes in and make their own as a manufacturer. But they can't do that because you have to do that in manufacturing facilities, and we're a retail store, and you can't mix the two.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Long.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Erickson and Mr. Long. We'll just a few wrap-up comments, and we're going to go to the spreadsheet on the omnibus bill. But we have Marquardt, Hortman, Lincheski, and Loon. Representative Marquardt. Yes. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, the more I hear about this bill, it just sounds like trying to put a round peg in a square hole. I mean, it doesn't sound like they are at all cigarette manufacturers. And so what I'm wondering, what is the problem that you're trying to solve with this bill? If people buy loose tobacco, then they're not paying the same taxes that people who buy prepared cigarettes are. Then wouldn't the problem be that we need to tax the loose tobacco differently rather than treat these people who have machines like they're Philip Morris?
Well, what I'm looking at here, Representative Ortman, is it's amazing how people are buying cigarettes that have never been manufactured. What they're doing is they're manufacturing cigarettes, is what they're doing. Somebody's manufacturing cigarettes. And if there's manufactured cigarettes, they should be paying the same tax as manufactured cigarettes. And that's what the bill does.
Mr. Chair, wouldn't the only thing, if we were to pass this into law, wouldn't the only thing that would change would be that people wouldn't roll these at a shop? They would just do it somewhere else. They could go, as the testifiers pointed out, to an Indian reservation, to another state. They could buy a machine for their home or roll it during the football game. It just seems to me that it's kind of anti-competitive to treat these folks who have a machine like they are a manufacturer like Philip Morris.
Okay. You can go.
Is that right?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Lincheski, then Gottwalt, then Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, it's interesting how people are coming at this question because, Mr. Chair, I think you have a really good bill here, and I I think you should put it in the omnibus bill. I think you should put Representative Loom's bill in there, too, actually. But as we heard, in fact, I was at Walgreens yesterday, and to hear that those little cigars are $1.92, the guy in front of me bought a pack of six, $6.14. Wow. So that is a big price differential for, it's basically the same product. But, you know, the way I was thinking about this is, and I heard someone say there's one in Bloomington. I don't even know where it is, but so I was thinking about this as coffee. You know, people used to just get the old Folgers at home and put it in the percolator, and then someone dreamt up this Starbucks thing, which, you know, at the beginning, people thought was sort of like, yeah, right, people are going to pay for coffee that much. And that's exactly what they're doing. You're coming in, you're picking your blend, and then they're brewing it for you, and then you're walking out the door. You know, so sort of a, the way I'm thinking about this in my head, sort of a similar thing. You know, you could buy Folgers, you know, cigarettes from Philip Morris, or you could go to, you know, the cafes, you know, tobacco and order your, you know, whatever. I mean, so this has grown to now when you stand there at Starbucks or Caribou, there's the soy latte, caramel macchiato. There's like everything under the sun, and everyone's got their little blend. And so, I mean, I see that sort of similar, you know. And at first I thought these were going to be like designer places for smokers. Like, I don't want to go get, you know, what's behind the counter at Walgreens. I want to pick my fancy, you know, personal brand of cigarette, and then they'll roll it, and I'll walk out. But, some of the people talked to me about this bill said, well, actually, no, it's not probably a designer boutique, more expensive deal. It's a cheaper deal. You know, so because you're getting the, you're rolling your own. So I don't really know anything about how these things work, but I kind of come at this from a completely different angle than this market and who's the little guy and the big guy. I mean, we're the tax committee, so it's the tax policy. And to me, you know, if you're Starbucks and you're brewing, you know, the venti, super nice, you know, $5 a cup thing, or your Folgers in the cup grocery store, you're paying the same tax. It's just the truth. I mean, we don't give a reduced sales tax on coffee at this place versus that place. You know, so it's why anybody big or small should pay a different tax. Or if you said, look, there's this little startup retail shop in Representative David's district, and they're just beginning in their little boutique, and they're selling gifts. You know, they don't get to pay a smaller state sales tax than Target. You know, it's the same tax. So to me, the role of the committee here is separate. You know, I mean, they got to duke it out in the market, but the tax policy, why somebody would pay less taxes for the same product, whether they're big or small, I don't get that, and I don't get it on Representative Loon's bill either. If it's tobacco, it's tobacco, it's tobacco. I mean, if you want to give, some people don't like that, then give the big guys a tax cut. I mean, I wouldn't support that, but I just think they should all pay the same, and so I think your bill's a good idea. It's just charging everyone the same tax rate.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Representative Gottwald.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I disagree with Representative Lincheski. I agree with her about the tax committee's role. But if we start doing this, I mean, there's already a federal challenge on this whole issue. And we don't tax a home brew or a microbrew the same way we do a really big brewery, a Budweiser or a Miller or whatever. So we differentiate quite a bit on those sorts of operations. And they're not selling the same product. It is a different product. It is more of a choose-your-own-blend kind of thing. We're dealing with, what, five locations, nine machines in total in Minnesota, and it is kind of the big guy versus the little guy. What it's really about, it seems to me, is some people love to get a little extra tax revenue. I don't know how much more tax revenue we'd actually get out of this many manufacturers, but across the nation, this is the big guy versus the little guy. Putting people out of work in small shops in our towns, and not giving people the opportunity to do something that's kind of a little bit different. We allow for that kind of freedom. If what you want to do is tax the tobacco, Representative Lincheski, I think that, you know, you want to take tobacco as a product and say let's tax it by volume or something. You know, to me that's maybe a fairer approach. But until it's outlawed as a product in this country, I mean, we ought to think about what we're doing here. It's pretty clear to me from the testimony what we've got going on. And I just have a concern that we're being asked as a matter of state tax policy to simply favor the big guys over the little guys.
Well, Representative Gottwald, I appreciate your opinion, but I respectfully disagree, because when we talk about the big guys and the little guys, I'm not looking at the big guys and the little guys. I'm looking at everybody paying tax on a cigarette that's been manufactured. And the example of coffee is actually quite different. Coffee doesn't have a health impact fee. It doesn't have the federal excise tax. It doesn't have this tax and that tax. It has a sales tax, but not all these other taxes. And as far as putting out people out of business, that's the last thing I ever want to do. But if you look at some of the other letters here, how many retailers? There's 9 machines now, but what happens when there's 900 machines or 9,000 machines? And then how about the retailers that lose their jobs? How about the convenience store guys that lose their jobs? How about all of that? So the jobs issue doesn't really fly with me because it's a net sum game here. There's some if this person has a job, well, you took it from this one here, because you're going to smoke so many cigarettes until you're dead anyways. Okay, so with that being said, we will, Representative Loon, and then we're going to wrap this up and get to a spreadsheet here. Representative Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to briefly thank you for including the bill, and I appreciate the comments made around the little cigar bill. And I particularly want to thank Ms. Moylanen for testifying, but also my constituent, Mr. Bryant, and I'm pleased that we're actually on the same side of this particular issue. I think this makes sense for a lot of the arguments that have been raised in committee. So I just wanted to publicly say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loon. With that, we will lay House File 2489 over. We're going to go to members, to Ms. Templin, who I believe is here. Ms. Templin. Members, we have a revised spreadsheet. Remember yesterday we said that there'd be some different numbers possibly coming in. Those are the ones that we want to talk about right now. And then at noon, of course, we're done. So, members, tomorrow we will continue work on House File 2337. So, members, if you could keep in your packets anything to do with 2337 so we have it. You should have the DE1H dated March 13th. Oops. Okay, let's go to the 3 p.m. Do you have it, Representative Lencheski? 3 p.m. yesterday. So, Ms. Templin, so I will move House File 2337. Members, we won't be taking any votes today. As amended, tomorrow we will be starting to mark up the bill more, and we will open it up. As I said, yesterday we'd take more testimony today, but I guess I'm not going to be able to live up to that one. But we will have it open for testimony tomorrow for folks that support the bill or have concerns with various portions of the bill. Ms. Templin, could you please update us on this, and then we're going to wrap it up for today, and we'll have a full day tomorrow, and I'm sure Friday also, unless we get the whole thing done tomorrow, which is highly unlikely. Okay, Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. We'll just go over the spreadsheet very quickly. One of the changes since yesterday, we mentioned line number one, the FOC credit, tax credit, that estimate did come in yesterday, and that did go down. The estimated revenue gain for fiscal 13 through fiscal 15 slightly was adjusted downward. And then moving to the other part of the spreadsheet under property taxes, the targeting property tax refund, that estimate did come in, and that is at $4.1 million, and that is slightly changed from yesterday. And that brings us to, there are other changes too, but just to get to the bottom line, the net changes to the general fund in fiscal 12 and 13 is $3.5 million estimated revenue reduction for the fiscal 12 and 13 biennium, and negative $224.1 million in the 14-15 biennium. So since yesterday, with the changes with the February forecast, there is a negative balance. And that summarizes the changes since yesterday.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Templin? Well, with that, members, thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Templin. If you have questions down the road for her, feel free to contact her. With that, members, just a little roadmap here. The Property Tax Committee will go back into session, I believe after session or whenever that's been designated. And we're going to try and get through that today so that we can be talking about the entire bill plus the TIF issues tomorrow, and then we'll probably be looking, I'm sure we'll be looking at Friday, unless we just pass everything and get it out. So with that being said, we'll try and wrap this thing up Friday afternoon. Representative Carlson?
Well, you mentioned TIF.
Microphone, please.
Well, I can also use my best teaching voice, but that when you mentioned the TIF bills, I was curious just how many different TIF bills could conceivably be included in the omnibus bill. Or let me put it this way, how many are TIF bills is the property tax division hearing? I don't have to serve on that.
Representative Carlson, there's 28?
No,
28 bills. 28 separate issues that would be considered, right?
Eight TIF bills.
Okay.
So there will be a significant part of the bill.
That's correct. Yes.
If it passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said Friday afternoon. What time does the committee start on
Friday?
10 a.m. Okay.
Unless we get done tomorrow by noon. That'd be fine. Okay, with that, members, thank you very much for your work and staff. Good government all the time. We're adjourned.